Welcome to Awakening Plus. It's March 24, 2022. This is Ask Me Anything. And we've got three folks in the room so far, hopefully more coming in as we go. So again, this is just a conversational event. There's no Mesa, there's no energetic setup. It's just us guys talking. And unmuting is available. So actually, let me just say, allies, please come and please support this event being really optimal for good information sharing. Thank you. So the floor is open. If anyone has a question, just feel free to unmute yourselves and ask it. If you strongly prefer typing, that's okay too, although I love the verbal exchange. Carmen, hi.
Hi. So I have a question about reincarnation. So I was under the impression, or my belief system was that unless we are advanced beings, that we all reincarnate, and unless we're like Jesus, we come back again many times. But I just saw something recently. I either read it or heard it recently about that may depend on your belief system. Is that true? Do you know?
I don't know what's true about that. I don't have memory of my past lives, and I have my own belief about stuff, but I couldn't swear it's true or not, so I can't vouch for it out of my experience like I could with some other things. I tend to the law of one teachings make sense to me, and what they say in regard to that is, again, it's kind of vast and goes beyond most people's scope of reincarnation. The idea there is that that first you just have divine unity, and then the divine puts a piece of it out to experience duality and have some actual experiences beyond unity, and that little piece goes through a multi-billion year process. And Law of One says, in a single universe, you would start just at what's called first density. You'd just be fire, earth, air, or water, and you would just do that for like a few billion years. Then you'd work your way up to second density, which is you get to be animals or plants, and you might spend a few billion years being animals and plants. There you at least have some volition. You're able to turn toward the sun. Then you get to third density, which is us humans, where you now have free will and things like that. But they say the main reason you're here as a human is to make a choice between service to other and service to self. And once you make that fundamental choice, you actually graduate third density and you don't have to be a human anymore. Then you go to fourth density where you spend a long time, like each lifetime there is supposedly like 90,000 years, where you just refine the subtleties of unconditional love if you're on the path of love and light like we are. And then there's, in human terms, a few billion more years of higher and higher densities all the way up to seventh, at which point you graduate the whole universe, the universe wraps up, and then a new universe pops out, and on it goes. They also say that there's been an infinite number of universes before this one, and there will be an infinite number of universes beyond it. So, when I read that, I said, that's way beyond what I was thinking about when I was thinking about reincarnation before. Most people say reincarnate, well, that's just about what is this human thing going to do? But they extended vastly beyond just the human experience. And again, do I know that's true? No, I don't have firsthand memory or experience of that. I'm not awake enough to vouch for that, personally, but that's the current idea I'm working with. I'd have no idea if it's correct, but it's the working hypothesis I've got at the moment. So is that in any way helpful?
Yes, it is actually. Yes.
Okay.
I haven't You've talked about this many times about the law of one, is that what it's called? Yeah, and I have not yet investigated that, so I'll have to do that. But you've spoken of it
And if
many
you want
times
to,
before.
it's like super easy. It's free. You go to lawofone.info and they have all their publications free online. You can read them all and not pay a dime. They also, if you want to buy the physical books or download the ebooks or the audiobooks, that's all available too. They're a nonprofit and they just, a big part of what they did was channel this being called Ra, which is the basis of the raw material that they put out. And then they have a number of related things as well they've developed over the years. But I know all the people there behind the organization. They're in Kentucky and they're just amazing, really high vibration people. So, that's the vision of reality that makes the most sense to me. And who knows if it's really the way it is or not, but that's my current working hypothesis. what I like to put as a PS in a discussion like that is, whatever your belief, I believe that you don't have to know for sure the way it fundamentally works. As long as you're taking the right action, then you'll work out fine, whatever the reincarnational scheme may be. So I believe if you're on the path of love and light, serving others the best you know how, waking up the best you can, working on your shadow stuff, you know, that's the path that's going to give you the best outcome, whatever the reincarnational scheme may or may not be. So to me, it's all fascinating and possibly a bit academic. Another thing they say with Law of One is the human experience is not about having definitive final understanding of how the universe works. They say the human experience is just about making that decision. Am I going to be service to other or service to self, which sets up, you know, billions of years of further evolution at higher levels. And then this is like the pivot density, third density where we're at. So just making that fundamental choice. Am I going to go on the path of light or the path of dark? Yeah. So that's what they say anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's very helpful. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's a great question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions out there? Brian, I think I accidentally muted you if you were asked. So if Brian, if you would unmute yourself again, if you were meaning to do that, I'm sorry. That was
my question. Okay. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi.
My question is related to dowsing, and this form of dowsing would be in the use of a pendulum.
Okay.
And in your opinion, I understand the fundamental concept of it working with energy, but in your opinion, is it the mental mind or the energetic body that's moving the pendulum, or is it beyond scope and it's, you know, our spirit guides or a spiritual team that's doing that? What would be your opinion on how the pendulum works in that sense?
My opinion is it's the divine answer coming through if the human is open enough to receive the answer. You know, there are many forms of dowsing. Having a pyramid swing, usually it's counterclockwise is, you know, would one swing clockwise or counterclockwise is the yes, or other is the no. You have to check for yourself which direction is which answer. And that can be a really, you know, if the thing to do is whatever sits for you, just test it the best you can. You know, my belief based on my own experience is some kind of dowsing is the best way to get an answer to a question that your human self is confused about. And the older I get, the less able I find myself to make a definitive rational decision, because especially in this day and age, there's so many compelling arguments on either side of an issue. You know, both sides can make great and really profound seeming cases, but they can't both be right. You know, so, what I find is I just find some way to get a yes or no from my higher self, and I trust that and I go with it. And that has worked well for me. So, you know, can I stay with absolute conviction that that's the case? I'm pretty darn sure for myself, but do I have scientific, empirical, double-blind tested proof? No, I don't. But I believe it's true. And for me, I've worked with a pendulum years ago. My favorite form of dowsing, there's two. Actually, the one I use mainly now is just a simple muscle test with the fingers. Again, dowsing is just any form of getting an answer from beyond the human is, I think, the way I would fundamentally define it. And what I like to do is take my left hand and form a ring with the thumb and index finger. And then I take the right hand and I put the thumb and middle finger together. And then I put the right hand into the left hand hole like that. And then what you try to do with an answer is, when you're going for the answer, with your left hand, you try to hold that ring together, and with your right hand, you try to push it apart like that. And for me, you know, if the ring holds, it's a yes. And if the ring flies apart, it's a no. And you're giving it your best shot with both hands. One hand's resisting, the other's pushing. But when I've done this for years with this technique, and I find that I can actually get a pretty consistent yes or no very quickly for any question I've got, major or minor. Other variations, there's even a one-hand variation if you do it real subtly. You take your index finger and make it rigid and straight. You take your middle finger and put it on top, and you try to push the index finger down with the middle finger. And if the, for me, if the index finger stays rigid, it's a yes. If the index finger collapses, it's a no. When I'm first teaching dowsing to someone who's never done it before, I use the simplest method of all that I'm aware of, which is you stand up straight where you could either lean forward or lean back just as easily and discover for yourself by asking which way is a yes and which way is a no, forward or back. And that's just one of the simplest ways to dowse. Just stand up straight and ask your divine to show you a yes or a no. And then you can test it by starting to ask questions you know the answer to and see which way you lean. And that can be a really simple way to dowse. Sometimes I'll just feel in my heart chakra. A yes for me then would be a sense of rising, a sense of wings coming up, a sense of, you know, broadening or expansion or rising as a yes. Or if I feel in my heart chakra, there's a sense of compressing or constricting or wings drooping, that's a no. And what I like about the heart chakra technique, is that there's all kinds of shades of gray available. You know, maybe the wings rise just a little bit or droop just a little. Or if there's no real thing, you know, so those are the some of the ways I've used over the years for dowsing. And again, a pendulum is great too. I always err toward how simple and straightforward can I make it, and not having to use a prop like a pendulum. For me, it's easier if I can just use my body without needing anything extra to get a yes or no. So I've erred toward that kind of system. So that's my riff on dowsing, for whatever that's worth. Is that helpful?
It's very helpful because I do get very accurate answers with my crystal when I'm using the pendulum. And I'm really focusing on not moving at all. And my fingers, when it's moving, it's very still. And I don't even feel any type of reaction or subtle muscle movement whatsoever. So I was just very curious on exactly how that worked.
Yeah, my belief is that it is your higher wisdom coming through. And how effective your dowsing is, of course, is going to depend on how transparent a vehicle you are. A person who's really cleared the channel and is a very clear and open recipient of divine energy, I think, is going to douse more accurately than someone who's all blocked up with hucha and they haven't cleared their channel yet. So, you know, it's the thing where you can get more and more accurate over time. That's why I encourage people, whatever system they're trying, you know, do a lot of testing with it, a lot of yes and no on stuff you know the answer to. Or things that you could discover the answer to easily, like, you know, you could have a friend, you know, write a word on a card and just little simple tests of dowsing or something you don't know, but could quickly and immediately find the answer to. And little testings, things like that could give you a way of, you know, discovering, you know, like you might shuffle a card deck and have it all face down and you say, okay, douse, if it's a spade or a club, you know, is it a red card or a black card? You know, just simple things that you can immediately get an answer to would be good ways to test that, for example. Mm. Yeah.
Informative. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Anyone else got a question? Anjali.
Hi. Yeah. So I'll go on video. So I'm not hiding in the dark here.
Nice to see you. Thanks.
So I've had a burning question, and when I saw tonight was an ask me anything, I have a question about the shamanic and energetic significance of accidents and injuries. And the reason I ask is I'm realizing I have this massive theme that just keeps popping up into my life where I have to reinvent myself constantly following another accident or another injury. And it has accelerated in recent years. I mean, my most recent is that I just had knee surgery like two weeks ago.
Sorry.
So I'm again reinventing everything and everything. And I'm always like tapping in. I'm always doing the things, but it just keeps happening. And I always try to come from a place of grace and working through it and finding the positive. But I feel like there's like some kind of theme that comes with it or some significance that maybe I'm missing and I should be seeking out.
Interesting. I'll first answer very broadly. To my best understanding, each human gets the experiences they need for their soul growth. And, you know, I guess a simple answer would be your soul chose to have a lifetime filled with that kind of experience for its own growth. And I've also observed that the people with the most challenging situations often have the fastest growth. In fact, in his book, Journey of Souls, the author, I'm trying to remember the exact name, but I'm
Gary Zukav.
No, that's like a different guy. No. That's okay. The Dancing Louis Masters guy. But he says, you know, when he's interviewed people and regressed them hypnotically back to the life between lives, they've said, yeah, you know, we chose a challenging lifetime because we really wanted to knock out a lot of the karma we'd accumulated in one shot. And sometimes that shows up with a lifetime with a lot more challenge in it. So if there's a lot of adversity, it just, you get to even raise a higher bar. Despite all of this difficulty, can I still hold my center? Can I still, you know, hold my divine being, et cetera? And I'm burning to answer your question astrologically too. So, I'd like to just take a quick peek at your chart. I don't recall if I have you in the system already.
I'm not, but I can give you my exact birth date and all.
Yeah. This is not going to be super in depth because this is not about astrology, but let me just, if you know your time, date and all that, let me type in your name here. So what's your date of birth?
August 3rd, 1982.
Do you know your time of birth?
Yeah, 1 minute until 1 in the morning.
So 12:59?
Yep.
That'd be 059, okay. Yeah. And what city was that?
Boise, Idaho, B-O-I-S-E.
Right, okay. So let me pull your chart up, and I'll go ahead and screen share so that, you know, anyone, is it okay if I share your chart on the screen?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I'm a Leo. Right. We love oversharing.
Okay. All right. So now, as it turns out, I've got a little bit of stuff on the screen. So I need to get my configuration correct. I've been doing some sort of extra work here. So let me get the right planets up here. Let me get the right aspects in play. Hang on. There, standard aspects. So let's see if your chart, I'm curious about your Chiron, if he's a big deal. Just a minute. So Chiron's the wounded healer often if he's powerfully positioned. Okay, there's Chiron early in your first house. So in the chart, the first house is the house of me, myself, and I. If you have Chiron early in the house, then he's a big factor one way or another. Mm-hmm. And in your case, it looks like one of the ways he's showing up is you're experiencing in your body, represented by the first house, generally a lot of wounding, okay, because of all the accidents. And accidents is Uranus territory. Uranus is across from Chiron. So Uranus is saying unexpected Uranus accidents. Chiron is part of your life experience, okay? So that's some obvious support for it astrologically, in my opinion. Now, if we look at the Chiron aspect setup, he aspects all four of the angles. So he's very strongly wired into the chart in a lot of ways. But fundamentally, his primary aspects to personal planets is harmonious. He quintiles the sun. That's a magical fairy dust kind of aspect. He trines the moon. That's harmonious and flowing. The Uranus opposition is the thing that trips up all the accidents. And Chiron even makes strong connections to the lunar nodes by minor hard aspects. He's making 45 degrees to the north node and 135 degrees to the south node. That's a semi-square and a sesquare. So it looks like you do have some karma north the nodes tied in with Chiron. And is there anything, often when I see a lot of Chiron action like this, there's a theme of I have to go through a lot of challenge myself in order to guide others through their own challenge. Is that a dynamic that's a strong one in your life?
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Every time I go through something, it's just different enough that it makes me open up a lived, compassionate experience that helps me identify with another entire swath of humanity.
All right.
So it's like one after the other, after the other.
Well, and, there it is.
Maybe I am on some massive track in recent years for getting to some next level or something, but I do wish it was a little less sudden sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you. By the way, yeah, I just saw that Mars is also loosely quincunx, Chiron. It's so subtle it's not even showing, but if we stretch our orbs just a little bit to like 3 degrees, I've got Mars and Uranus are the two planets that relate to accidents, and Uranus is across from Chiron for sure. Mars is a subtle quincunx. So yeah, that appears to be the theme that I'm seeing, why there would be so much accident stuff happening.
Now, when you see these things, like let's say you were to read anybody's chart and you had something like this come up, are we so bound by it, or is there something that like we can see a path to get through it a little faster or a gentler way or something?
Well, the more you awaken to your divinity, the more you are conscious as source, that part of you is beyond your astrology. The astrology only binds the human self or influences the human. Bind is not the right. Influences the human self. So even the awakened person is still affected by their astrology at the human level. But when you start working from divine being, you get a whole new way of playing that's so far advanced beyond what the human would be capable of. And that enables you more easily to take whatever the high potential of the chart is and accentuate that instead. The more awake you are, the more you can burn through that karma more quickly and efficiently. So you don't have to have so much challenge in such obvious ways. When you start getting good at shadow work, the more awake you are, the more easily you can do shadow work, then maybe you don't need to have as many accidents, or maybe they heal faster, and it doesn't have to get quite to be such a slog. And in fact, I would just request that. You know, you say, I now call upon the universe to, you know, eliminate or minimize the number of, you know, accidents and injuries I'm having, you know, to the greatest extent that serves highest good. And if possible, let me accomplish whatever my soul needs in a way that isn't so difficult.
Yeah.
And it sure wouldn't hurt to ask.
That's great. Yeah. I had seen something that was like also triggered some thought, which just that these accidents and derailments sometimes are telling you you're not going in the right direction. And
And
what's been curious is that the last few, I've been getting like full signs that I am going in the right direction. So then I get smacked and it's like, oh God.
Okay.
So, and who knows? It could be circumstantial. We never
know. Actually, I just got another insight. In the internal family systems therapy model, one of the things that can happen is that if you have a burdened part that hasn't been healed, those parts can, from behind the scenes, cause accidents. Because if a part is so terrified of something that the rest of you is moving forward with, they'll try to derail it by making you physically unable to do that thing.
Ooh.
So one thing you should watch for is, as you move forward, are you aware of any part of your psyche that's resisting or wishing that wouldn't happen? Feeling fear, trepidation, resistance, whatever. And I would work with those parts, whether it's a healing invocation or internal family systems or whatever method you use to get to that part and unburden it of its concern. It means well because it truly believes that for you to have that thing happen would be catastrophic, but it's probably a part that was, you know, burdened off as a child at a young age, and it just doesn't understand the higher perspective that your adult self gets. This part is still a child and is still fearful of irrational things, right?
Yeah.
So that's another approach that might be helpful, is to find those parts that are burdened and resisting whatever change you're doing and get them on board with it.
Oh, that's so insightful. That gives me some great direction for meditation tonight. Thank you.
Yeah. And as I'm sure you're aware, there's an internal family systems therapy course inside Awakening Plus, and my voice will
guide you. I've done it a couple times. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah. So
that's another approach you might take.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Juicy question. Thank you, Anjali.
Thank you.
Okay. Who's next?
Benjamin?
Yeah.
Is it okay if I ask Anjali if she wants some information from a book that I have concerning accidents? Is that allowed, or is it not a good idea?
I think it's Anjali, are you
open.
Willing to hear?
Are you open, Anjali?
Bring it on, Jeannie. Well, let's get some other wisdom in the room here.
Before I do my IFS, you know, my internal family systems work, I use a big book. You've heard of the little book by Louise Hay, Heal Your Body?
Yeah.
Well, this is a big old giant book. And
oh, wow.
It's almost the first line out of every topic is almost exactly like her book. And then she came up with the affirmations. So some people think that she read this and it sparked her to, you know, do her work. So I go here. So I thought, well, maybe I can help. And so I, you know, I went to Accidents and there's five possible things. And I'm like, well, I can't share all that. So I did muscle testing on remotely for you.
Yeah.
I got two of them. And it was kind of funny.
I love how community works with Benjamin and the family here. It's fantastic.
Yes. Yes, me too. And the first thing, you already pegged it, or one of you, I think it was you. This is word for word. So if it's not, it's got a curse word. Okay. It's shit happens. So accidents, well, you know, they're going to happen. And then I just want to make sure that you know that Shinola happens too. So shit happens, Shinola happens. And then the other thing that you tested that it could be a possibility for you for, and this would be helpful if I was doing IFS for me, is that it said destructive implants are going off in reaction to crossing the forbidden line towards manifesting their destiny. The implant was built in as part of an intense keep them around the old homestead programming designed to maintain them as the parents' private preserve. So that would fit something in my life because I did have parents that did try to keep me around the old homestead. Yes, go to medical school. Oh, but you have to be home at all times and you have to get married the day you graduate and have a baby. You know, so it's like they wanted to keep me under their thumb and their control and whatever they wanted. So that would work for me. But I'm just reading it in case it works for you. You might go, no, I kind of like the first one. Shit happens.
No, there's something triggering. There's something brewing with that last one. What was that? You said destructive implant. Yeah. That's what you called it.
Well, they're beliefs. You know, you got these beliefs. Yeah. Your parents wanted you to be a certain way or they wanted to have access to you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting out of that. So then I would go to IFS and I would like find that little part of me that comes to me when I ask, when I go through the program, you know, the little video thing.
That's fantastic.
Thought I'd share.
Thank you. Thank you. I know I love that we can get into the meditation and the healing and we can do the, you know, go through all the steps and all that. And then, but there's sometimes still that mental side that still needs to hear words that like send off little light bulbs for us so that we have some concrete something to, you know, call the guides in for.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me share. Risa, thank I love you. Your kitty. I see your cat.
Yeah. I've been enjoying the kitty too. I couldn't tell if it was a cat or a dog, but it makes my heart happy when I see it. Is it okay, Benjamin, if I share a couple of things too?
Oh, absolutely. Jump in, please.
Just an affirmation of what Benjamin was saying about how the energies of the chart are there, but we decide how we're going to use them. One of the clearest examples of that I know is that Gandhi and Hitler had very similar charts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, what did that say? They were meant to be very powerful, influential people. They each chose to use that in an incredibly different way. So that choice is up to us, you know. One thing I'd like to comment about Chiron too, as the wounded healer, that to me is a gift that carries some weight and responsibility. We have to heal our own wounds in order to be the healer for others. I've had a number of challenges in my life that some people would just be overwhelmed with, but I have chosen to use them to heal as much as I can and to not take credit when I have miracles and people want to say, oh, look what you did. Wow, you're really powerful. Well, no, I am, but I am the same being that I was the day before when I couldn't breathe and I was starting to pass out and my heart was, you know, in palpitations, and I was at Mayo for open heart surgery one day and another, and then the next day my heart is healed. I was the same person both days. I didn't just suddenly become a powerful healer manifester because my body healed. My philosophy is showing up and saying yes, surrendering, allowing for the miracles. And they do come, but also knowing that when we're going through the tough places, it's not because we've done anything wrong. In fact, just a little thought about that, Ram Dass, you know, is a pretty powerful spiritual being and had a stroke. Amma, the hugging saint, has diabetes and awful arthritis. I've heard her say one of the reasons that she is embodying these things is to remind her that she's in a human body and to be able to feel what some other people feel and not just be exempt. You know, so those are just some things that I wanted to share with you.
Those are beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I feel like there must be some way I'd like to call Chiron, the wounded healer, into my meditation tonight. And you're talking right there. It's like, I just think I need to have like a nice little sit down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you very well can call Chiron into make friends with Chiron. Anything that's in that space in the first house is rising. That's you. Who am I? I am the wounded healer. I have agreed to take on a lot of things so that I can heal them, so that I can fully understand and be an example for others. If I can do this dance, find my joy in the midst of all of it. You can too. That's what you're saying when you say yes to Chiron. Make him your friend. Say, come on, help me understand. Help me get the fullness of what you're trying to bring me. I am you. You are me. We are here to serve and love and be an example. So I think that's beautiful.
I love it. This is all very affirming too. Thank you.
I laud and honor you. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to throw in one extra bit. I just noticed another thing about your Chiron, Anjali. I'll bring the chart up again real quick. Again, Chiron's across from Uranus, and in the house system that I use, Porphyry, Aquarius is contained inside your 10th house, which means Uranus, the ruler of Aquarius, is one of your career ruling planets along with Saturn.
Ooh.
Okay. So that means Chiron is not only trine your midheaven almost exactly, but it's right across from one of the planets that rules your midheaven. So that to me is two statements saying that Chiron wants to come out and work in the world. And
that's got tingles up my spine.
Yeah, that's stepping out as some kind of healer or mentor or both.
And we've talked about that, yeah.
So that's an interesting little nuance in addition.
Oh, thank you. Woo, I knew I had to be on this call tonight. I knew it. I was a few minutes late in, but I'm like, everything is like, don't you dare miss tonight. You get on that call. Okay, I'm here. I was on my crutches across the room so fast.
Yeah, in fact, I just got an insight because of all the great insights. I'm going to rename this. You know, I called it Ask Me Anything because that's what, you know, people typically call this sort of call. I'm going to change it to Ask Us Anything.
Ooh, I like that.
Because really, yeah. There's so much great wisdom with the group. I really, you know, and I'm going to redo the description saying, yeah, I'll answer things, but the wisdom of the group is entirely welcome. And
There's so many intuitives in the group too, so we all get tapped with these little things. And
I'm just thrilled that so many really conscious and talented people have been drawn into our circle, and it's silly not to take advantage of all this great wisdom. Yeah. So.
Well, Benjamin, you're a little light, and all of us little moths come fluttering around.
Well, some of y'all are pretty bright yourselves, so. Cool.
Benjamin, while you're on her Chiron and the houses, the other day I was listening to something and I wrote down that as far as Chiron goes, where it is in your chart, the house and the sign, it tells you how you can be as a teacher, healer, or shaman. Mm-hmm. Is that true? So it's in her first house. Yeah. So that's like Spirit Song was saying, that's like she's a shaman naturally.
Well, that's a potential. I mean, I like to say that the chart is archetypally predictive, but not concretely predictive.
Oh, okay.
So what I would say is those are all possibilities of how the chart could express, but it isn't how the chart's required to express.
Okay.
But they're big potentials. You know, my chart, I've got the Sun Chiron conjunction. Chiron is just 2 degrees away from my Sun. So Chiron's a very powerful planet for me too. And my Sun and Chiron are both opposite my own Uranus. So Anjali and I have a similar signature with Chiron Uranus opposition. Yeah.
So if I use different systems, if I used Whole House, because that's what I learned, and then I go to Astroseek and they use Placidus or whatever, and then you use Porphyry, then my Chiron might not be in my second, mine's in my second house, but it might be in different houses in different systems.
Depends. You'll just have to, I mean, there's 40 different houses. You have to look. So just which one do you want to use?
What does it mean to have it in your second house? Cause that's cash, property, possessions, and what you value.
Well, it's also income. And so there are, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on astrology because that's not really the focus of the call, but there are 3 career houses, 2, 6, and 10.
Okay.
The second house is the money I make, the income, the produce of the career. Sixth house is the minutiae, the details, the routines, procedures of the work. And the 10th house is where it's most visible, where, you know, that's the major career house that usually you look at when you look at career stuff, what your reputation is. Yeah.
I don't mean to get off on the astrology. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So I hope that was concise enough. And so good. That was so juicy. And I'm loving all the input from all these wise people. So I welcome that totally. All right. Next question. Okay. The politeness. There you go. Brian. Hi.
just to segue off of some of the astrology that we've been talking about. Each astrological age, roughly about 2,200 years, in relation to the star system Sirius. Is it true to your knowledge that correlates with the sun and how close that star system is to the sun in relation to the astrological age?
Okay. Again, I'll try to be concise on this. It depends on which astrological system you're using. Mainstream Western astrology does not use the actual constellations. It uses the seasons. So for Western astrology, Aries, the sun is in Aries on the first day of spring. Now, the other main system that does differently is Vedic astrology from India. And they actually have their signs laid out but when the sun enters the actual constellation. Okay. Now, again, even that's an approximation because we all kind of rough it out and give each constellation 30 degrees. So, you know, the constellations are obviously irregular and some are wider and some are narrower. But the Vedic, you know, beginning of Aries is roughly now 26 degrees away from where Western astrology says it is. Okay. And it will take them 26,000 years to come back into agreement as to when Aries begins. So, so basically they have a system that is based on the sun's actual entry into the constellation, or at least that 30 degree window that they're designated as the constellation. Whereas Western astrology is saying, no, it's Aries when the beginning of spring happens. So it depends which system. And of course, there are also Western systems that use that idea and, in different things. So I don't want to get into all the technical words that describe that, but, you know, if you're going actually by constellation entry, you'd be working with a more Vedic kind of system based on actual constellation entry. But Western astrology uses the seasonal entry of the you know, seasons and the signs. Does that help at all?
So I'm just trying to get a really good, better understanding, I guess, as far as for each astrological age. Mm-hmm. Is there a correlation between Sirius and the sun?
The star Sirius?
Yeah, the star system. A rather than B.
If so, I'm not if I learned that, it was so long ago, I've forgotten anything about that. I don't recall Sirius being a key factor for the astrological ages. My understanding was just, you know, each, like we're now in transition from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. And, you know, that's a gray period of long overlap, apparently. But I'm not aware of a direct correlation with Sirius. If there is one, I'm just either never learned it or have forgotten it if I did. So
I just found that I did hear that, and it was rather interesting how it just said for a golden, I guess I should be a little bit more specific, and I apologize. So what I mean by each age is more of a golden, a silver, a bronze, and an iron age.
Okay. Are you referring to the Vedic great ages or something different?
I believe that would fit into the Vedic side.
Right. And even there's controversy. You know, some people say we're just transitioned from the very darkest of the ages into the highest of them. You know, some great astrologers are saying that. Others are saying, no, we have to now take thousands of years to work our way gradually up to that golden age. And it again depends who you believe, you know. Okay. So I have some familiarity with that kind of thinking, but I am definitely not an expert in Vedic astrology, and I couldn't speak to, you know, how the ages are working that way. But there is definitely a Vedic, you know, where an age can last thousands of years, and they're not even of the same duration. Some of the ages are quite a bit longer than others. So, it's just a description of long-term, you know, shifts of ages. So I know it's a little bit vague, but that's my best understanding of that broad system.
I appreciate it. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Next question. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about astrology. It can be, but. Okay, if someone has a question, but they're being polite and leaving space for someone else, you've left enough space. Go ahead and ask it. Well, if we're out of questions, we can wrap it up. So now we're at a point, if you really have a question, but you've just been shy, this is definitely the time to pop it out. All right, last call. Risa, you don't have a question? Nope.
I can make one up.
If you want. It's up to you. I think you're the only one who hasn't spoken. So,
Is there something that's in a 7-year cycle, so it would now be the same as 7 years ago? I'm having some things revisiting, and I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two astrological 7-year cycles. The most one that tends to have the greatest impact is Saturn. And Saturn takes actually 29 and a half years to run around the chart. So it's actually 7 years and change, really. but he has roughly a 7-year cycle to go from wherever he was to the 90-degree change from where he was at. So if in your own chart, you know, you now have Saturn at a place where he's making especially a hard aspect to something significant, a conjunction, opposition, or square, then that might be significant for you. Another subtler 7-year cycle in astrology is the planet Uranus, who moves through every sign in about 7 years. Now, that's not as obvious a pattern because that means, you know, 2/3 of the time he's not going to be making a major aspect to whatever point he's working on. He's going to make a lot of various aspects to that point, some stronger, some weaker. So I would say I would first look at Saturn by transit and see if he's doing anything significant. And secondarily, I would check Uranus if you're finding some kind of 7-year cycle is happening.
Okay.
I hope that's helpful.
Thanks. I was just noticing it today. So it was kind of on my mind. No one else is going to make up a question, though.
Oh, do you still got a made up question coming?
No, I was just wondering if anybody else was really.
Oh.
If everyone's ready to go.
Sure.
Thank you.
One way to see that is, okay, if you did have a question, what would it be? Pancha Avatar just typed, just glad to be here.
Maybe.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I needed to scroll over to notice that he was here too. Sorry, I didn't mean to exclude you, Pancha Avatar. I just had only so many windows were off the top of my screen there.
I have a curiosity question, Benjamin.
Okay.
When this is like for everybody, but especially for you and maybe Spirit Song, when, you know, the Ukrainian war was started, most of the planet, well, a lot of us, even those of us that supposedly know better because we're spiritual and we should be able to see things on a greater scale and step back and see the good happening and the duality of it all and the learning and all the good stuff too. But still, I mean, a lot of us got very upset and, you know, did an empath thing and we're all just, you know, discombobulated. Did that happen to you? Or did you just like from the very beginning go, oh no, this is part of the upscale, the upgrading of the planet. And so, you know, maybe you didn't get all discombobulated, or maybe Spirit Song didn't get discombobulated by it all. You just sort of immediately saw it from a dual purpose upgrade.
Well, I had my own response. Does anyone else want to jump in and give their own spiritually focused response to the whole Ukraine thing? And anyone want to share how they dealt with that?
I can
give it a turn. Okay, Spirit Song?
There's another person sharing. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so Anjali, I think Spirit Song is giving you some time first.
Sure. I'll say, like, there's two things. The empathic feeling thing does hit you, because even if things are getting shook up and there may be a deeper purpose, we are going to feel it. And so on the one hand, I work on staying neutral and watching, trying to be the observer state that we always, you know, strive for in what's actually happening, but also realizing that there are individuals in a lot of pain because of it. And so while I try to work towards that watcher state, I'm also trying to flow through for them. And that's where I use the invocations a lot, because I think the hook is when I start trying to fix it. Like, even if we're worried about a friend or something, we're trying to do everything to fix it. So what I realize is that because of the space that I carry energetically, I can do more by sitting and clearing and flowing healing energy to all sides, to whatever's going on, even to Putin, even to whatever rulers, whatever, you know,
good and bad is such a strange, you know, definition of who's writing the book at the time. And so I just flow it to everybody and try to release and try to call in highest good for a situation. Because yes, it is going to affect us. It's going to affect those around us. But I think the more that we can try to strive for that observer status while flowing highest good healing energy to everybody, we're not going to get as swallowed by it. It's going to release those little hooks in us that might try to hold on to it. And then we get those little bound spots of tight energy and pain in the body and all that. And just trying to stay in that flow state. So that's how I approach it. And there's unfortunately a good number of war zones in the world right now. And so whenever we start worrying about it or worrying about a loved one, we can go to the invocations and sit and flow for them. And it releases all the hooks for us. And definitely sends good energy for them to help them heal and whatever their process is.
Well said, Anjali. That's really, really wise. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree that that's really beautiful. And I am a very deeply feeling person. And so when I watch anything about what's going on, I cry. I'm in heart pain. I can't help it. I cry. And because I feel we're all one, you know, those are my children, grandparents, moms, dads that are separated from their children and their wives and all of the women in their family because they have to stay. It's really painful for me. But I also live with an incredibly deep trust. Just like when I'm showing up for open heart surgery and I'm trusting that, okay, healing hasn't taken place. I'm never asked to go where it's not good for me to go. There is so much that we cannot see and cannot know. Why the natives call the divine great mystery? Because there's no way to fully understand what's going on or even put words on it. If we think we understand part of it, one thing that helps me, because part of this pain comes from a feeling of helplessness. People are suffering and I can't do anything about it, is doing something for someone that in your little corner of the world, you're not only bringing the light into all that is happening, but you're physically doing something for someone. And we're all connected. So you're making a difference in that way. I don't know if that helps or not, but that's part of how I get through that. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, that's a beautiful spirit song. Thank you for sharing that. Anyone else want to share how they're dealing with the Ukraine situation on a spiritual level? Well, I guess I'll have to share then. The main way I'm working with that is as part of my daily Mesa sitting in the morning. One of the last things I do is I send energy to both individuals and groups of people. And I start with, you know, one person. I first send high school energy to spirit song. And then I start sending to smaller groups of people. And then partway through it, I then say, may highest good energy now flow to all those challenged by the situation in Ukraine. And then I just relax. And I, Benjamin is just the conduit. I each of these, you know, sendings, I feel energy coming through and I can feel it's going out broadly, but I don't have particular vision about exactly what the energy is doing to particular people. I just have a sense of it flowing out for highest good. And for years, I've understood that things may be happening that look one way, good or bad. And, you know, it's beyond Benjamin's deepest understanding about the good or bad in any particular situation. Kind of like Anjali was saying, so I just ask for highest good to flow and out it flows. And I'm just trusting that the energy is doing some kind of good. I've listened to a lot of podcasts, especially, and, you know, I have the Washington Post subscription, so I keep updated with that stuff as well. But, you know, I've heard a lot of stories about the individuals affected, and I'm watching strategically what's happening on the ground with the war. But, my nature is very Aquarian, and I don't get as caught in emotion as some people do. So I'm able to, you know, take in this information and not feel just emotionally steamrolled by it. So I'm able to maintain a little bit, cooler perspective just because of my astrological nature. You know, Aquarians are air, and that's a cooler energy than, and even my moon, the emotional nature is Virgo, very analytical, very precise. So I'm not as easily overwhelmed, as some people are. In fact, I've had to work my whole life just to get more empathic. So it's taken me a while. But again, my fundamental premise that I always return to is how awake can I stay? And whether you're a person who's really empathic and feeling it all so deeply, or whether you're a cooler cucumber like me, either way, the more awake you stay, the more capable you're going to be of being a good conduit of energy for the highest good of whatever that situation is. And, you know, I work with some people as clients who are very, lots of Cancer or Pisces, lots of very high sensitivity, high emotion. So you're here to really be with that emotion. And yet you can get to a point where it doesn't just overwhelm you, where you can have that really potent emotional field, you know, contained within the awakened state. And then you can enjoy all the emotionality without being enslaved to it. So that's something I work with some clients on. So I hope some of that is helpful. I'm just sort of rambling on the topic broadly, but that's my answer on that.
Yeah, I was just curious. I just wanted to know what, you know, different people in the group went through. And I went through some at the very beginning, and then I realized what I was doing to myself and how that is not going to be helpful to those people if I stay in this empathic, oh my gosh, state. It's just not going to help me. So then what was really cool is, just, you know, whatever comes up, love it. You know, if I'm upset with Putin, just love that situation. If I'm upset with this group or some weapon they might use that's scary to me or some awful thing, you know, I just love that. And so I turned that around. And so instead of like, working on healing work for me, I call it love work now. And I just love whatever it is. And so it's helped, you know, me learn, you know, this horrible war. So it helped me learn, you know, I always heard that, you know, love is the bridge between you and everything else. So if there's something that I want, then I gotta love all the way to it. I gotta use that bridge to that thing and then bring it back, and it just sort of comes together and collapses. And so, you know, by loving physical ailments, I'll get insights on how to fix it that I maybe wouldn't have gotten if I did quote unquote healing work. I cleared the chakras, I, you know, cleared the entities, I did IFS, I did all this mental work. Well, it's good to also do the love work. Because then I, you know, I just recently couldn't figure out what is wrong with my blood work. Oh my gosh, why is it so crazy? And then somebody said, it has something to do with your stomach. And I went, it does. What does that have to do with my blood work? And so I just, one night, I just loved that whatever the stomach connection to it was, because I couldn't figure, I didn't know. And I woke up and I knew immediately that, you know, if you have low stomach acid, you can't absorb iron. Mm-hmm. So then it was just real easy from there to figure out what to do. So, you know, the Ukrainian thing helped me learn love better, which helped me. So that was kind of cool.
So I want to probe into your use of the word love there a little bit, Jeannie. I often speak in similar terms of when I feel like a heavy energy within myself, I say I just become one with it and I love it. And I'm using love there in the technical term of become one with. without
right. And yeah, I've heard you say passive so much that I kind of mix it in together with the love.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So the distinction I'm wanting to make here is not love in the sense that, oh, I really enjoy this and I wish it was happening more, as opposed to I am loving as in becoming one with, merging with, knowing that when my divinity merges with something, that which is disharmonious will tend to fall away, because the presence of love and light in a field tends to diminish the darkness. Is that more in the sense of your meaning of love?
Yes, because I am such an empath that merging is just my nature, and so I don't even know to use that. I just do it automatically. So that's exactly what I do.
Okay, good. Yeah, and I've been revisiting some of the great spiritual classes. I just reread The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And that's what he says. What I was amazed after reading it, it's been decades since I read that book. And I said, oh my God, there's so much he's talking about that I'm teaching too, without consciously realizing it. We're not exactly the same line, but there's a lot of crossover. And he says, if there's anything discordant, just be with it, be fully present with it, and your simple divine presence with it will tend to heal it. And that's also what we're saying here. He says, you don't have to understand a thing about it. Just be fully present with it, and that simple presence can be the healing touch it needs. So it sounds to me kind of like what you're doing there.
Yeah, mostly. Mostly. It's just interesting to watch all the, all the different groups that I see on TV and in my private life and on classes, how each of them has evolved and shifted and changed and upgraded because of the way they had to deal with Ukraine. It just seems something that I keep noticing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating.
In that vein, I'd like to share something secondhand. I'm in an art group, and one of the people in it has really done the most sensitive portraits. And he did a portrait of Putin. He did tanks rolling into the town and just the sense of that. And that sort of study of the subject is another way to bring that love to it, which I found really moving.
Hmm. Yeah. One thing as I watch the whole global response to the war that's very encouraging to me is how beautifully NATO and the U.S. and the allies have responded to what Russia's doing, by really supporting Ukraine and sending them weapons and things that will help them, and walking that fine line saying we can see the darkness of what Putin is doing. We can't afford to directly step in ourselves, because that means World War III, and then Putin might launch the nukes, and that's obviously terrible for everybody. But just getting as close to that line as they can, how much can we support the forces of light? Obviously Ukraine represents democracy and individual liberty. And I just appreciate how well overall I think countries are responding, and how well they're holding together despite, the many differences they have with each other. And I can also see how some very good things may eventually come out of this. Europe, so much of Europe recognizes, wow, we're so dependent on Russian oil and gas. Maybe this is yet another reason we need to speed up our transition to clean energy, so we don't have this tyrannical power holding this massive, leverage over us, where we have to have their energy to heat and move around, So there's all kinds of interesting things that can run downstream from this. But all I know about that is what I read in the liberal media. So I only have a one-sided view. Anything from anyone? Do y'all feel that energy in your head right now? I'm getting a really sweet brain vibe right now. Yeah, we can just, wasn't on the agenda, but we can take just a minute. If you're feeling that energy in your brain, just take a minute and enjoy that. That's just feels like a spontaneous gift from our allies. Huh. Actually, that's interesting. They're suggesting if you want to, just ask for highest good energy to flow to all those affected by the war in Ukraine right now. So if you want to just do that, just relax and ask that energy flow through you and kind of on the side, watch your brain and that what the energy is doing as you do that. And Ophulus coming into a blended group field. The allies are saying all is well. This war is happening for a good reason. They're saying good things will come of it. Good energy. All right. Anyone else have anything at all?
In the chat, there's something.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I haven't been.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say, too.
Okay. Yeah. Pancha Avatar. Tip Tristan has had a really terrible phone connection, so I guess he's coming in by text instead. Thank you for doing that. He says, earlier when we were talking about how to flow energy, he said, I just asked the spirit that I am to flow through my body, divine harmony, to the tapestry of harmony on the earth plane that serves highest good. And he just repeated that. So obviously he wanted me to speak that. So got it. Thank you. Sorry, it took me a minute there. Bunch of avatar. So anyone have anything further? Are we done? So last call for questions or comments or whatever you're feeling to contribute. All right. I guess that's a wrap then. What a cool call. So I'll have this up by tomorrow. And thanks very much, everyone, for showing up. Very juicy, very exciting. And yeah, I'm definitely going to rename this Ask Us Anything to really emphasize how everyone's input is welcome. As we do have such a talented crew, it's a shame not to take full advantage of all the wisdom and insight here. And good energy, too. All right. Thank you all very much. It's been a true pleasure. And many blessings to all of you. Bye.